We've been reporting on the war against science, particularly in the US, for quite a while. It seemed to gain momentum during the George W. Bush era, but boy, is it getting up ahead of steam now. If science is about the facts, what does it feel like when it's under the sort of siege? Now, we're not talking about debate within the scientific community about how robust this data or that research is, or criticism raised during the peer review process. We're talking about the outliers that challenge and question science, a given science, on the flimsy ground that it is, quote, just a theory. There's those who propose intelligent design, vaccination being linked to autism, that climate change isn't settled or proven. There's even a Flat Earth Society that recently attracted 600 believers to their conference. So stepping up to defend science from denial, fraud and pseudoscience is Martin Gardner's descendant, Lee McIntyre. Lee's a philosopher of science, research fellow at the Centre for Philosophy and History of Science at Boston Uni, and he's here to talk about his new book, which I'll now hold up to the microphone so you can all see it. Lee, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
Do scientists really feel under siege in your country?
I think they do. There was a March for Science a few years back, and I went to the one in Boston, and there were thousands of people there, scientists and supporters of science alike. It happened in many different cities in the U.S., and I believe it was worldwide. So I think definitely scientists feel under siege in the United States.
Well, you described the signs you saw: keep calm and think critically. Extremely mad scientists. No science, yeah. No Twitter. I love reality.
it's so severe the nerds are here. That was another favorite. And another favorite was one where they said, I can't believe I have to leave my lab to do this. And that I think that hit a chord with me, that scientists, you know, just feel enough under siege that they're not just ignoring it and doing their work. They're out protesting.
We had a very impressive minister for science in this country who happens to be my oldest friend, Barry Jones. And Barry used to be very critical of the scientists whose role in Australia he endlessly defended. He said that they tended to be a bit wimpy when it came to public argument. Do you think that perhaps the scientists haven't been fighting hard enough?
I do, and I say that with all respect for scientists. The work that they do is absolutely incredible, and I have just, as I said, great admiration for what they do. But one reason that I wrote my book, one thing that I've noticed, is that when scientists are confronted with science deniers or with pseudoscience, what they tend to do is to just present their evidence. And then when that evidence isn't accepted or they get an irrational argument back, they walk away. They stop debate, you know, more or less with the attitude, well, you can't talk to these people. And the problem with that is that clears the field. That just leaves the irrational people, it leaves the science deniers to have an audience and to just continue to say whatever they want. As I said in my book, you don't convince somebody who doesn't believe in evidence by presenting them with more evidence. And I think that what scientists need to do is to talk more about not just what they found, but how they found it, the rigor of the process, what they go through, really how science works, because I don't think that the public really understands the value of uncertainty, the power of evidence, what peer review is, what sort of rigorous testing things go through. And what it means is that science deniers have this incredibly bad conception where they think that science is about proof and certainty. Science can't prove anything. It's not about certainty. It's based on inductive reasoning. It's about the empirical world. But their beliefs are based on justification given the evidence, which is something that philosophers call warrant. And it's really, you know, a great overwhelming degree of probability for what they believe. But the minute they say, you know, well, this is proven, then the science denier can say, well, you show me your proof. And then they can't do it. And then there's trouble. So I think that scientists need to fight back, but they need to do it in the right way, which is to embrace the idea that uncertainty is a strength rather than a weakness of science, and talk about how science works.
I introduced the program tonight and the fact that you were coming on by describing myself, a fairly notorious atheist in this country, as a faithiest, someone who has faith in the scientific process. And of course, what's admirable about it is that a scientist, unlike a dogmatist, is actually capable of changing his or her mind on the basis of evidence.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. I define the scientific attitude as the idea that scientists, number one, care about evidence, and number two, that they allow evidence to change their mind. Say they want to believe that something is true, perhaps because they're human, but when they test it against the evidence, if the evidence doesn't hold up, then they change their mind. That's very different than believing something based on faith. When you believe something based on faith, you're basically saying that no matter what the evidence, you're not going to change your belief. To me, that's really what's so distinctive about science and what separates it from the ideologues, the science deniers and such, because what scientists are exhibiting is a flexibility of mind to say that they're willing to change their beliefs based on new data, new evidence. And again, I think that's a very admirable thing. When you're talking about empirical evidence, you know, about the world, if you want to know how the world works, I think that's proven, you know, down through the ages to be the best method.
I mentioned Martin Gardner, and of course, when he was tackling pseudoscience, he often did so with enormous wit and humour.
Yeah.
And you are guilty of a bit of that in your book, you naughty person, because you take us to a two-day flat Earth conference. Please be our tour guide.
Okay, well, I'm flattered by the comparison. Thank you very much. So what I did was, I'm a scholar of in the philosophy of science, but I think that scholars, philosophers, just like scientists, are sometimes guilty of just sitting in our study and being right. And I didn't want to do that. I wanted to go out and test my theory that the way you convince somebody or the way you you handle science denial is not just to clear the field, to go and have conversations. So I registered for the conference, and I flew out to Denver, Colorado in November 2018, and I went to the Flat Earth International Conference, where there were about 600 true believers there. Now, they maintain that...
I want you to paint the picture. What were the demographics? Yeah. Are we talking about old people? Are we talking about... who was there?
Everybody that you could imagine. That was the amazing thing to me. You couldn't tell by looking at the crowd what they were there for. And I think if you'd spoke to them about other subjects, you wouldn't necessarily know that they were flat earthers. I did see a lot of black T-shirts. You know, at times it looked a little bit like a Metallica concert in that sense. But there were men and women, young and old, just people from all over the world who were
so
there.
So they didn't have tin foil wrapped around their heads. They were ordinary human beings.
They were ordinary human beings. And, you know, I went in there with friends saying, you know, this is all a joke. They don't really believe it. But they did believe it. And so the amazing thing to me was to spend the 48 hours that I did at the convention realizing that they were absolutely serious and that they didn't, although a number of them were fundamentalist Christians, their beliefs were not based on faith. They said they were based on evidence, and
did they present any evidence to you, Lee?
Oh, they did. They presented a lot of evidence. Now, it was not good evidence.
Hang on, I'm just going to take notes here in case I'm persuaded.
Well, thankfully there are YouTube videos where we can all school ourselves on this evidence, but I'll give you a taste of it. One fellow flew there, forget from where, but he brought a carpenter's level, and he put the carpenter's level on the tray table on the plane, and because the bubble didn't change position, he took that as proof that the Earth had to be flat.
I'm convinced. That settles it for me.
Yeah, right. It's case closed, right? They don't believe in gravity. They think that the North Pole is at the center, and then the Earth is flat, and Antarctica is not a continent. It's it's spread out along the edge of the Earth in an ice wall. They think that there's a dome over the top.
A dome over the top. That sounds like Stephen King.
We're living in a snow globe, according to them. You've got to understand, too, that there are factions. So the Flat Earth Society is different. So I went to the Flat Earth International Conference, and they do not like the Flat Earth Society. I don't know if you know if you're a fan of the movie Life of Brian.
I was just thinking about that very parallel.
The People's Judean Front and the People's Front of Judea, they hate one another. So I can't necessarily say that everything that I'm attributing to the Flat Earth International Conference people is true of the Flat Earth Society. They're different factions, but the one that I went to was the Flat Earth International Conference. And I engaged in, the first day I kept my mouth shut, and I wore my badge and I took notes. And the second day I engaged, I spoke to them. Not as a scientist, because I'm not a scientist, and also because, as I said, they're not convinced by evidence. They think that all the pictures from NASA are photoshopped or faked. Any scientific evidence you present, they're conspiracy theorists. They believe that the government is pulling the wool, world government is pulling the wool over everybody's eyes. So. What I did was I just had to engage them as a philosopher would, just to question their reasoning. And they were cordial. They engaged me in conversation, trying to convince me, I think. But it was really an amazing experience, because I came away with the idea that they are conspiracy theorists. They believe a lot of different conspiracies, but they're absolutely dead serious about this. They think that they are the people who know the truth, and that most of the world's population needs to be woken up.
It's a huge conspiracy. You wouldn't get a bigger one. I have to ask you this: is the moon flat? Is the sun flat? Does the same thing apply to other bodies in the universe?
I think that I didn't get a straight answer on that. I think that they believe that the other celestial bodies are either just outside or just inside the dome, so that they are sort of going back 2,000 years further to maybe what the view was, but they had an account that was supposed to explain time zones, et cetera. I mean, the thing is, don't get your hopes up that there's a perfect explanation for all this, because while their arguments are quite intricate, when pinned down, they'll move from one thing to another. And it's, they're not, for all their talk about evidence, about doing your own experiments, they're not reasoning about it as a scientist would, because the key is, this was my main question to them: what evidence would it take to prove to you that you were wrong? And they really couldn't answer that. And that's what a scientist does. A scientist is always on the lookout for what evidence could show that they were wrong. And the flat earthers were ideologues. They were not willing to question it, and kept insisting on that I provide them with proof that the Earth is a globe, even while they rejected every piece of evidence that I offered, either in favor of the global Earth or the idea that the flat Earth was wrong.
I believe that there's one group, not they weren't at your conference, but there's one group who doesn't believe that Australia can exist.
This was, yes, the Flat Earth Society years ago had something on their website that was picked up recently claiming that Australia was a hoax. Now, I don't know whether that statement in particular was a sort of a trollish statement or whether people actually believed it. I take it that some people actually did believe it. But yeah, you didn't know that you were living on a continent where it was a hoax and you were all crisis actors. I have to say that the group that I went to their conference, the Flat Earth International Conference, they think that Australia is real. It's just not where we think it is.
Okay. Now, of course, the government, the U.S. government, NASA, airline pilots, etc., are all a part of the conspiracy. But it's pretty good because it also encompasses, well, the old Soviet Union, modern China. It's a lot of people involved in the conspiracy.
It is. And this was really the most fascinating thing for me, because my hypothesis going into this was that I wanted to study science denial in its most elemental form, you know, just the most basic kind of science denial. And my theory was that all science denial is basically the same, whether you're talking about climate change deniers or anti-vaxxers or flat earthers or deniers of evolution, that their reasoning strategy works like this. At some level, they believe in a conspiracy theory. They cherry pick evidence that suits them, and they reject evidence that they don't like. They rely on their own experts, even if they're not experts. And they pursue a bad reasoning strategy. And so my idea was that if I could study this, I could learn how to talk to them, then I could use it to talk to anti-vaxxers and to climate change deniers. And what I found, in fact, is that a lot of those other folks don't want to be lumped in with the flat earthers. I've gotten some hate mail. They've been angry with me for making the claim. And yet, if you look at it, of course, you're right. The biggest conspiracy possible is a global conspiracy against the flat earth. But listen to an anti-vaxxer talk about how the CDC paid off the Institute of Medicine to suppress the data on thimerosal. Listen to some folks in Washington who are talking about how climate scientists are really all just liberals who are in on the conspiracy because they're in it for the grant money and they're suppressing data. They too believe in conspiracy theories, maybe not as big a one as the flat earthers, but it's the same type of thinking.
We've only got a short time left together, but I want you to speak briefly to your concept of the scientific attitude. You argue that it's attitude, not method, that matters.
Yeah, I think that people think that scientific method explains what's distinctive about science. And I, along with most philosophers, reject that notion, because you think of scientific method as a kind of a recipe that you follow, observe, make a hypothesis, make a prediction, test. I mean, scientists do all those things, but there's no recipe for science. I think that what's really distinctive about science is their values, this idea that they're going to be guided by the evidence. And this isn't just something that individual scientists have. This is a community ethos that's instantiated through the practices of science, like peer review, like data sharing, like replication. I think that that's what really marks off the difference with science. There's a fundamental honesty to putting your theory out there and saying, I'm going to compare this to the data, and if the data show that my theory is wrong, I'm going to own that, and I'm going to change my theory.
On that inspirational note, Lee, I'm afraid we're going to have to wind up. So I thank you for your time. Lee McIntyre, philosopher of science, research fellow at the Center for Philosophy and History of Science at Boston. The new book, The Scientific Attitude, Defending Science from Denial, Fraud, and Pseudoscience, is published by MIT Press. And Lee, we'll ensure that our readers, I'm sorry, our listeners can find out all about your book, because we'll put the publication details on the LNL home page.